This is episode 40 of the Wildlife Photography Podcast. In today's episode, Andrew and Jono discuss Namibia. Hello everybody, my name is Jerry, I'm from WildEye, and today I'm going to hand the podcast over to Andrew and Jono, and they're going to be discussing the logistics and details around a trip they just did up to Namibia as a part of planning a very exciting new safari. So without any further waffling from my side, Andrew and Jono.
Awesome. So, great to be back on the podcast again, guys, and chatting with Jono. So, as you know, we both recently went up to Namibia. Jono, do you want to tell everyone why we were actually up there?
Yeah, we're going to be running a photo safari there in 2018, specifically trying to concentrate on desert-adapted wildlife in the more remote regions of Namibia. It was important for us to look at the properties, what the properties had to offer, not only from a lodge experience, but also from the wildlife experience, and to ensure that they were going to fit the mold of what we were going to try and create for our guests and the experience for our guests. So, yeah, fact-finding, with some eye-opening stuff, but overall, fabulous.
Yeah, I think having first-hand experience of the areas that we go to is something that we like to try and push a lot. And,
yeah,
you know, as we expand, it's not always possible, but wherever we haven't been able to get first-hand experience, we've been in touch with the right people on the ground. You know, we're talking about people that lead expeditions or have built up on a body of work in that area, you know, logistically, and the cost implications of getting to some of these places. But Namibia was one of those places that we managed to squeeze in a couple of days at each of the camps.
And it was far too short, so next time you organize it, please organize it longer.
Well, that's the thing. Guys, just to put it into perspective, what we're going to be discussing now is really around 4 nights worth of our experience. The safari itinerary that we've got going for 2018 and 2019, that's a total of 11 nights in this area. So when you hear us talking about the passion and the how we've been blown away over a period of just 4 nights, you can kind of triple that up to what the overall experience would be. Would you say that that's fair, Jono?
Oh, absolutely. I did a blog on Hoenab the other day, and I was at Hoenab for 2 nights on my own. Andrew joined us later at Desert Rhino. When I went through my images, the amount of great images that I could capture from really an environment that is not teeming with wildlife. I mean, there's a lot of activity there and a lot of animal life there, but it's not like the Mara, for example, where you're going to bump into something exciting around every corner. But just in 2 nights, so literally 2 game drives in that area, because one of the days, I'll expand on that more later, is we spent at the Skeleton Coast, which was also phenomenal, but literally on 2 game drives, the amount of quality images that I got in such a unique environment was incredible. So for 4 nights there,
You put a little smiley emoji in your blog post around a comment where you said that even a gecko would look good against these backgrounds. And I think that's pretty much what this is. And, you know, for me, I really enjoy animals in their environment. And as you say, literally the concentrations may not be there, but you come around the corner and you can find a springbok standing in this riverbed with this incredible backdrop. And, you know, when you start to then expand that onto things like elephant and rhino and think, how on earth are these creatures surviving in areas with less than 100 mils of rain a year? It's bizarre.
Well, I think the average rainfall for Hoenab, just touching on that, is 20 mils a year.
Yeah.
They have had this year and some unseasonal rains, which came pretty late, a month or so ago. But even then, I mean, for these animals to survive in that environment. Yeah. And I was trying to work out what was so special about the photography there, and I think it probably was the uniqueness to be able to photograph a giraffe with stark, craggy mountains, hills, kopjes, whatever that terminology. It was just absolutely incredible in a white open sand, a lot of red sands, a lot of different textures and colors of the sands, and the light was just phenomenal. Mm. So I think it probably was the uniqueness, and I think everybody is looking for areas to go to where they can get unique shots of an animal like a giraffe that they photographed thousands of times in different environments, but certainly not in an environment like what Honeb and other parts of the Damaraland, the Palmbach and Coacafelt has to offer. So
literally almost every opportunity that you have there with decent light and interesting backgrounds, which are always there, is something new for a portfolio. Because it's so difficult.
I mean, I got there at about 2, we got to camp, did the whole camp induction, indemnities, went to my room. I said to the group that I was with, let's go and drive, the sooner the better. I couldn't wait to get out there. Just the short drive from the airstrip to the lodge was 6 minutes. And that, just looking around, I thought, my goodness, to get an animal in this environment is going to make magic. And we went out. We found a springbok, a lone springbok, and I might have taken 200 shots of that lone springbok because it was in this glorious light.
You've never seen a springbok before.
Yeah, but not in this environment, unique environment. So that was the deal. I just was so excited. Didn't get my exposures quite right because it was a different, from a lighting point of view, the shadows. But you know, you've got to be on top of your exposure compensation game. But you know, once you get it right, it's perfect.
Yeah.
But,
well, let's chat a bit about the logistics of getting to Honeb. So, you know, we're going to start the safari, and our journey also started in Windhoek.
Mm.
You know, on arrival, there's the wilderness safaris. All of the camps we use in the itinerary are with wilderness safaris. So, as you get into the airport, there's a lekker little lounge where you can kick back and relax. The guys help you and confirm exactly what time the next flight is, and then from there, it's a small flight due north to Doranawas.
Yes.
And that's about, what, an hour and 20
hour
or so?
Hour and 20,
And, I mean, just chat through some of the scenery. I remember you saying when we met there, just that flight alone, the changes.
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate. First of all, when you get to the airport at Wilderness, they've got an office there. Their service is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, on the biggest scale of things, that's why we like to partner with Wilderness because of their professionalism.
Mm.
I was quite lucky to be the only guest in a caravan on the flight up to Doranawas. Great pilot, great guy, can't remember his name. That's how good
Jeff.
He was. Jeff for this. Yeah, so I sat and chatted to him, and just the change in scenery and the change in vegetation and the change in topography and the change in the sands and the colours of the soils and it was just amazing. And I couldn't help, and every time I had my iPhone, I took an image out of the window, and I think, okay, well, that's enough. And then 5 minutes later, it would change so vastly, and I'll go another one, and another one. And I did, you know, in my blog post, on the trip up to Honeb, I looked, you know, did on the change in the vegetation are quite dramatic.
Yeah.
One of the
things that struck me was, you know, coming from South Africa, Namibia, 2.3 million people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you come out of the capital, Windhoek, and the airport's about 40 km out of the actual town itself, but almost immediately there's nothing below you. I mean, there's the odd road cutting through the landscape, but it's just, it's wild, eh?
Absolutely. You know, I love all parts of Africa, but, you know, there's some parts of Africa that are busier than others. And what excites me is getting into the wilderness and into areas where there's very little populations. And that excites me. Part of the itinerary was, as I said, Skeleton Coast, and literally you sit on a beach, have your lunch with not any human inhabitation with 100 kilometers either north, south, or east of you. You know, so that excites me, just being in the middle of nowhere with no other people, obviously, besides the guests that you're with. Incredible.
So let's just go chat a bit about the beach side of things, because, you know, some people may be thinking lush palms and that sort of stuff. This is the cold, frigid Atlantic Ocean. It's hard, it's rugged, seal colonies, shipwrecks. So, you know, what was that day trip out? So, you know, when you're at Honeb, and we'll do this as part of our itinerary as well, we take a long drive down the Honeb riverbed, ending at the Skeleton Coast, at the seal colony, spending the day there, and then flying back. Just what was that like for you?
Just on when I was there, due to the late rains that had, I couldn't do that drive in.
Mm.
But I couldn't help myself looking out the window of the areas that we would travel and obviously flew and thinking, my goodness, I just want to be on the ground, because if anything in that environment, as I said, it could be a gecko, it would have been, you know, incredible to photograph. And I couldn't help myself thinking about a sand dune with an oryx on the top, and, or an ostrich on the top. So we landed in at the Skeleton Coast, and obviously it's got this mystique about it of the shipwrecks and the dangers that it's created for sailors and ships over the years. And it was so desolate, just devoid of any form of vegetation, the odd shrub here and there, rolling dunes, you know, rocky outcrops, and oasis is in the middle of these, nestled in between these, like this whole green area with this big expanse of water.
Amazing.
Incredible to see. And that contrast of that water against the sand dunes is absolutely incredible. We did see some, so we saw oryx from a distance there. We came across two springbok, and one of them stood out on a higher rocky sort of ledge, and managed to get a photograph of this desolate scene behind it with a faint image of the Atlantic Ocean behind. That to me, I think, was probably my favorite image from the trip, and having a springbok next to a very close to a beach with the Atlantic Ocean in the back there.
It's bizarre, yeah.
So you can check out that image in Jono's blog on his time up at Honab. And then the rest of your time at Honab camp, for you, photographically, the highlights, and bearing in mind, guys, that I joined Jono 2 days afterwards and then caught up on his experience on his laptop, so I know there were a couple of highlights there photographically.
The last morning, we you know, one of the highlighted species that you want to get there is the desert adapted lions.
Mm-hmm.
I know some of the pride have moved off into different areas, but there is a female that, and incidentally, she does look pregnant, so her teats are quite swollen. So there was reports of a month or so ago, a male in the area, they were seen mating.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure she's going to drop a litter in the next couple of months, so that'll be quite exciting. It wasn't great photographically. She had killed a young giraffe and
Hang on. So in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere, this lioness has killed a giraffe by herself.
Well, when I say it wasn't great photographically,
if you'd been there a couple of hours beforehand, it could have been different.
Yeah, two days before, it could have been. But there's the opportunity, you know.
Yeah.
It's obviously nature, and it's time and place, and it's spending time in an area, working there, where your rewards are going to be greater.
Sure.
I think photographically, the last morning, obviously up and down it was spectacular because I was just photographing anything and everything that I could in this environment. But the last morning, our last evening there, I was sitting around a fire with, it sounded like the United Nations, a group of four people, one from Switzerland, one from Spain, one, I don't know, they were all from all over Europe. And they showed me some photographs from their iPhone. They'd been towards the floodplains that morning. And when I saw these images, I excused myself immediately and found my guide and said, we are going to those floodplains. Because of the late rains, on the section of the Honab River, just before it gets to the floodplains, you've got these yellow daisy-like flowers, like a meadow of these flowers.
Mm.
And the thought of elephants in that with the spectacular backdrops of these mountains, I just thought to myself that. So I went to Papaji. I said, Papaji, how about an early start tomorrow? We hit the floodplains. He said, absolutely. And we got a 5 a.m. wake-up call, had an early breakfast, and off we shot. And we found the elephants, and we found the elephants in these meadows. And it was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of elephants in my life. I've had a lot of great elephant sightings. But I have to say that was probably my best photographic elephant sighting of all times. Again, some images in the blog just to give people an idea of what you can create and what you can capture there.
What you say, I mean, I think we'll start to move from Honab onto our time at Desert Rhino, but what is pretty obvious is that with these wilderness camps, is the guys are very focused on guest experience. If you request something, it's, you know, they will go out of their way to make it happen. And we experienced the same thing at Desert Rhino Camp.
Yeah.
And, you know, from a photography perspective, if you want to get out at a certain time, or you want to have a packed breakfast or a whole day out so that you can reach potentially areas which are teeming in game or are going to provide the right opportunities, you know, these guys will ensure that happens, which
is great. Absolutely. Nothing's too much for them. And what also struck me is that, you know, without obviously research or looking at it before, and they're actually quite photographically knowledgeable. So in other words, putting you in the right place, getting you in an elevated position, a lower position. There was a scene of an elephant bull walking. It was walking with the sun behind it, so it was quite harsh from a lighting point of view. But there was a gully that had run off the backwaters of the Hohenlohe River, and he parked the vehicle in that gully, so we were lower down and we could get a beautiful shot of that elephant, at almost like eye level type.
It makes a lot of difference. You know? Yeah,
that angle just made the image from a good image into a fantastic image. Although I say it myself.
Okay, so from Hohenlohe, about a 30-minute flight back down to Doranawa. So Doranawa is really the center, which feeds into these different camps. Yeah. And that's where you and I then linked up. I flew in from Windhoek and we connected on the same plane there and flew into Desert Rhino Camp. And again, you know, flying along that area, landscape completely different. I had my 2470 out and was literally brimming from ear to ear. You know, even if it was a midday flight, the scenery, the patterns and the textures and the change from dunes to this harsh, rugged environment, and in some places still flying over these areas which were completely green because of the recent rains.
Yeah, completely different environment, different soils, dominated by, you know, sort of rock, what we call it, ground cover, probably the wrong word, but you know what I mean. So it was different. When we landed there, I was expecting a Hohenlohe type thing, and the contrast. Actually, when I first got there, I thought, okay, this is different. I hope I'm going to enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't Hohenlohe, and you know, the 2 days I'd fallen in love with Hohenlohe, and it wasn't Hohenlohe. I thought, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy this as much.
Yeah.
I couldn't have been further from the truth and further from what actually happened.
I remember a moment where our guide was chatting, and you'd asked him about the recent sightings, and he mentioned that there had been lions in the area, and you and I both looked at one another and said, jeepers, can you imagine photographing lions here? And, you know, I think maybe that's where perhaps the name Desert Rhino Camp becomes a bit misleading, because there's a lot more here than the desert-adapted black rhino, absolutely, although that's the focus.
Yeah.
And, you know, in these massive areas, we heard Dr. Flip Stunder on the radio at that time confirming that he had seen these females. One of them had four youngsters with them, and they were on the riverbed. And, you know, in chatting with some of the guides there, they showed us how they use one river valley to go down to the Skeleton Coast, you know, and then move a little bit further south and then come back in using another one. So it's almost a circular movement.
Yeah.
But there are lines around here. And again, absolutely, like you say, spending time in these areas, you know, the more you practice, the luckier you get.
Absolutely. You know, I'm speaking to one of the guides there, saying that it's not a regular occurrence at all. It's more a rarer sighting, but he's seen leopard frequently he's seen a number of leopard in that environment. And and he knows more or less where they hang out. So again, working in an area more that you could uncover a lot more than the area has to offer. And again, I think we're there 4 nights, eh?
We'll be doing three nights at Desert Rhino Camp. Yeah. We'll run through the whole itinerary with you guys at the end. But just to give you an idea, Desert Rhino Camp is part of a concession, a much larger concession. So the area is divided into four zones. And through research, they've actually worked out that these black rhino are very susceptible to disturbances. So they tend to avoid areas, even if they have suitable habitat, which have a lot of vehicle pressure in them. And each day you would go out with the tracking team to a particular zone which is assigned to you. No more than one individual in two zones ever would be tracked on a day, just to try and limit that impact. And that activity is generally done in the morning. So our first afternoon there, we enjoyed a short sundowner drive. We saw Hartmann's mountain zebra, which was also, you know, quite unique. Not many people have images of that. There were some oryx around, springbok, jackal. What else did we see? Ground squirrel, Rupel's Quran. So, you know, just again, that diversity. But afternoon drives are generally concentrated closer around to the camp to limit the number of vehicles that are driving around in the concession, with the key focus then being your morning activity, which is tracking these desert-adapted black rhino. In the evening, the guys came through and gave us a bit of a brief about what we'd be doing, the safety brief and how it would all work. And they also mentioned that we're going into Zone 4, Jono. So when we looked at the map, it was quite a large area.
Now, Zone 4, when we got it and we looked at the map and we realized we were more in Zone 1, and each zone was probably half the size of Madikwe, I knew then that we were in for a long day. But in retrospect, it was the best way of doing it is heading up to Zone 4. We drove up there, and you don't get tired on those drives, you know, because it's a new experience. But you know, you're seeing stuff, you're marveling at the beautiful landscapes and the vistas and the different types of soils and the rocks, and it's just amazing. So we never really got tired. We stopped for lunch. We eventually found our first rhino at about 3:30.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they found us at the same time as we found them. We just bumped them. They were sleeping in a riverbed, and the guys from the Rhino Trust bumped them, and they bolted. They headed off
at speed,
well away from us. We then thought, oh dear, that's the only sighting of black rhino we're going to get. 20 minutes later, we came up another female and her calf, and we were able to spend time with them. They may have sensed something was wrong, but they didn't really know we were there. Mm. So we got within probably about 50, 60, 70 meters of them, took some really cool images, and all happy. And then we left there, and on our way back to camp, knowing that we are going to be horribly late, we came across another black rhino.
And this is where I think the experience from the guides at wilderness camps and the Save the Rhino Trust guys, you know, at no point did they kind of say, well, no, we've already seen our rhino or anything like that. They realized it was a long day, and you know, another 15, 20 minutes of this encounter would just make it that much more special. So they knew that they really were going above and beyond to give us these sightings once we'd come across them.
And I think also the last rhino we saw was in a different zone. So that rhino it was quite a new rhino because they were looking at the notching, so it wasn't a rhino that's regularly been seen.
Well, the other thing that came to my mind was, you know, if we've spent like 7 and 8 hours to try and find this rhino, now these guys, their job is to collect data and information on these individuals. They're not just going to drive past an individual. They want to try and get the information they want to see, who's there, what's happening, and so that the research and protection of this critically endangered species can continue. But this encounter was, I think, for both of us, one of the highlights. Well,
sporty rhino, the wind suddenly changed. He got wind of us, started trotting towards us, ended up in a full-on charge. We were sitting exposed on a small rise.
Overexposed, huh?
No, overexposed. On a small rise, and the Rhino Trust guys obviously work with these animals all the time. When she got to a certain distance, they stood up and just whistled, and she turned and headed off. So I didn't at any time feel like it was a dangerous encounter at all. You know, walking black rhino through thick bush and an SA point of view is not fun.
So
it's very different experience. So that was the highlight, and that just put the cherry on the top of an unbelievable day.
Yeah. Well, I think, having the 3 nights at Desert Rhino Camp will give us an opportunity to track black rhino on foot twice at least. And will give us another opportunity to spend time in those riverbeds to try and see if we can pick up on those desert lions or any of the other wildlife around there.
Yeah.
The camp itself is fantastic. I mean, it's very low impact, environmentally friendly, no airs and graces. There's even a little splash pool around in the middle of the Damaraland desert.
I think one of the things that also on this whole, there's no man-made water holes, but they've got these natural springs, pools of water that are littered all over this 150,000 hectare concession. It's unbelievable that you find, and it's obviously a lot of grass around them, a lot of life around them. And I think if you had time to explore and you knew there was something in an area that had been seen, you just got to camp out at one of those springs and just wait for the stuff to come down there, because particularly in dry months, you're going to get a huge amount of activity at a spring.
That was something else that struck me. And, you know, no matter where we go, we see a lot of human influence, whether it's lodges, cell phone towers, trig beacons. I think a trig beacon was probably the most, the only kind of sign of exploration and man in this entire wilderness. Yeah. And even that was, I think we only saw
besides the lodge.
Besides the lodge, it's not that rough, guys. But, that's quite unique these days. You know, the conservation areas, there's fences, especially in South Africa, but, radio masts and signals and towers and that sort of stuff. But they're really, this part of the world, you don't see any of that. You really do feel like you've traveled back in time.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So overall experience, I mean, okay, so when we did this trip, guys, the itinerary was slightly different to what we've presented on the website now. And we had originally included an additional 4 nights in Etosha. And after this trip, Jono and I in chatting and, you know, having spent a little bit of time up in Etosha, it was almost like a bit of a come down, wasn't it, Jono?
Yeah.
I mean, we've gone from this euphoric state in the middle of nowhere to landing in an area which is far more familiar in terms of the vegetation, far more developed in terms of fences, lodges, people.
Standing in a queue to get into the gate.
It's a national park, so you would you're surrounded by other vehicles. The actual format of your game drive vehicle has changed. Yeah. And so, I mean, we almost within 10 minutes of landing, we both looked at each other and said, we need to try and adjust this.
Yeah.
And it's not that Etosha is not offering good experiences or photographs or anything like that. It's just that we just agree and feel that the opportunities and the experience of that remote desert environment is worthwhile focusing on for the full 11 nights of the safari.
100%. It's like quite far removed, and it doesn't have the same feel at all as what the desert has to offer. And I think that you also can't go to too many diverse destination places. You know, if you want to really appreciate a desert environment where you're going to get unique, brilliant shots of animals that live in there, work the area. And I spend more time in a region, a particular region. You know, obviously Sossus Plain further down south, and they also very popular from a tourist point of view. And, you know, Dead Flay, and that's that most photographed tree in the world. Beautiful, absolutely. But there's a lot of people down there. Mm. There's a lot of tourism down there. High concentrations of cars, vehicles. So it's not the experience that we want to create. It's like we want to create an experience in raw Africa, untamed Africa, that will give you a sense of experiencing, you know, authentic Africa. And that's what we want to do.
So if you're listening to this and thinking, how on earth can you have an itinerary to Namibia without Sossus Vlei and Etosha? We can still help with bolt-ons, you know, to Sossus Vlei before or afterwards. But as Jono said, for this particular safari, our focus is on desert-adapted wildlife. And we're taking you to the most remote and productive regions that you can ever imagine. So let's just run through this itinerary quickly. So it starts in Windhoek, an hour and 20 flight up into Doronawas. From there, we're going to spend 2 nights at Doronawas. You know, the first afternoon game drive, we're going to be focusing on trying to find desert-adapted elephants in the river valleys there. The next day, we're going to do a full day drive out to some of the interesting geological kind of history of the area. So we're going to look at the Twyfelfontein rock engravings. I mean, you know, talk about rock paintings and that sort of stuff in many parts of Africa, but these are quite unique in terms of this has been engraved on there, and there's wildlife, there's stars, there's all sorts of things. So very interesting area. There's the organ pipes and also the petrified forest, which, I mean, from a desert area to find a petrified forest is just bizarre. So we're going to do a full day trip out into that area with obviously the chances of seeing wildlife as we go along. One of the cool features about Doronawas as a camp is that the doors open up and you can slide your bed out onto your deck and spend the night underneath the stars, but still have all of your amenities and that sort of thing close by.
Incredible.
So from there, the following morning, we'll do a game drive again, looking through the valleys and the riverbeds to try and find some wildlife. And then a short flight from there into Damaraland Camp, which is about a 10-15 minute flight away. So we're going to stay low to the ground, great photographic opportunities from the air, 24/70 needs to be with you. And then 2 nights in Damaraland, where again we're going to focus on finding the desert adapted wildlife of that region. Then we're going to fly back to Doronawas because this is the central hub, and then further north into the Palmwach concession, where we're going to spend 3 nights at Desert Rhino Camp. And as we've mentioned now, that's where we're going to focus on tracking and finding desert rhino on foot. And then from there, back to Doronawas and flying up to Ahanab Skeleton Coast Camp, which is probably the most luxurious of all the camps, would you say, Jono?
Definitely on the high end from a luxury point of view.
Yeah.
Quite different. It's almost like quite clinical in a way in the design, but it works in that stark environment.
Stark contrast, so
like
to the
shabby
environment.
Shabby chic type of effect. I mean, all the camps have everything you need, more than enough comfort.
Yeah.
the service is great, the food is great, and as Andrew said, the staff are extremely well trained, and are not going to say to you, well, you can't have this because we can't. They're going to make it happen, you know. So they're not structured in a traditional lodge rules sort of thing.
Exactly. And so we're going to finish up with four nights in this area, which will include a day trip out to the Skeleton Coast, to the oases, and just, you know, driving these riverbeds and finding desert adapted wildlife. So that's the 11th night. On the 12th day, back to Dora Nawas and a flight down to Windhoek. So we're taking a maximum of four guests on this trip. I think all the vehicles that we've used, we've got exclusive use of those vehicles. We find that, you know, with four photographers, everyone kind of gets on the left-hand side of the vehicle, unobstructed views. And we've also included additional freight seats for camera gear, which is often a problem when we're traveling. The one thing is obviously soft-sided bags. We saw a couple of people having to purchase bags at the airport to unpack, but that's a standard guideline when traveling through on these light aircrafts. Overall, I think I'm very excited about this itinerary. And
absolutely, unfortunately, I think the first trip is full because I'm taking my family. it's absolutely something I'm going to go back to more than once. I was just fell in love with it, literally. The beauty about it, the contrasts, just the appeal was just something that I've never experienced before. I'd been to Etosha maybe 19 years ago. My wife was pregnant with our first child. We'd gone from camp to camp, done the traditional Kukuyu, Namatoni, and in the middle, whatever.
Self-drive route.
And we drove for miles and miles, saw nothing. We got to waterholes, saw lots of animals. So, you know, it was great and it was different, but that's not the real Namibia that you want to explore.
So what you're saying is, if someone has already been to Namibia and perhaps even focused more on the landscape side of things or to the more traditional, more accessible areas, this is something
they haven't seen the real beauty that Namibia can offer.
I agree with you. And I mean, you know, I did a family trip through there years ago as well, and even on that flight out of Windhoek, I just thought to myself, you know, I remember the landscapes of Namibia, and that's what people associate Namibia with. But seeing it from the air is just it's something else. I think both of us were in a mild state of euphoria when we came back from this trip.
Euphoria
and,
or euphoria?
No, euphoria. They're all euphorbias we leave in the...
That
in the Damaraland. So that reference was quite poor, but it's valid because Jono was chatting about Euphorbia damarana, which is the main bush that the black desert adapted black rhino feed on.
Okay, but, one week, yes, Jerry, you're right.
But yeah, I'm very excited about this trip, and I think it's quite a unique offering in the Wild Eye brand at the moment. You can't really compare this with anything. There's no other destination, country or region that you can compare what the experiences are on this trip are.
To everybody that's listening to this podcast, take it from me, it is a region that you cannot not get to. It is phenomenal. The uniqueness of the photographic opportunities there will absolutely blow your mind. And I know there's a lot of photographers out there that are looking for diversity in their portfolios. This is the place.
If there are a lot of photographers out there looking to see some of the images that we're chatting about, where can they find some of the stuff that you've shared online from Hohenlip?
I shared a blog yesterday, Hohenlip Skeleton Coast, Namibia. Just search for that on the Wild Eye blog, and you will find it fresh, new, and...
And a couple of posts on Instagram as well?
A couple of posts on Instagram, at Jono Buffy, that's Buffey. I'm a few on Facebook, but rather go to the Instagram.
Right, so same from my side, guys. You can find some of the images under at Andrew Beck SA on Instagram. And as Jono said, there are a whole bunch of posts on Namibia currently on the blog. There's also one which is going to dive a little bit deeper into why the desert-adapted black rhino is a bit more unique than some of the other subspecies. So be sure to go and check that out. That's obviously wildeye.com, and you'll head straight across to the blog. Right, Jono, thanks very much for your time.
Pleasure.
And hopefully we'll both be back in Namibia soon.
You better believe it.
Ciao.
Okay, ciao.
Right, guys, so there you go. It's definitely worth you going to check out some of Jono and Andrew's images. It's absolutely insane. I mean, I got married in Namibia many moons ago in the Sossus Vlei area on the dunes, and you think the red dunes is all there is, but there is so much more to that place. So again, John O'Buffy and Andrew Beck essay on Instagram, go and check it out. I'm not even going to give you mine today because I say it every time, so I'll just say to you, if you want to check out this trip, go to wildeye.com, wild with a hyphen, eye.com. Look for the Desert Animals of Namibia photo safari. It's insane, and I think that's kicking off next year. If you have questions, guys, drop us an email. The office email for Wild Eye is info@wild-eye.co.za. info@wildeye.co.za, and then Laura and the team can get back on any questions you might have on some of our trips. Anyway, guys, as always, thank you for listening. Thanks for your attention. I will chat to you guys in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Have a good one.